Good evening and welcome to Radio Edutalk. My name is David Noble, I'm in Dalgety Bay as ever, and tonight I'm delighted to welcome to the show Ken Muir, who's the Chief Executive and Registrar of the General Teaching Council for Scotland. Good evening, Ken.
Hello, David.
Oh, and this evening we're going to be hearing about a report that you authored on the experiences or reflections on the first year of the new national qualifications in Scotland. And just before we get straight into the kind of meat of the report, I'd just like to draw listeners to a couple of things. First of all, if you'd like to have the report to hand and you're listening to a live show, if you just go to edutalk.cc and in the blue bar near the top of the Edutalk website, you'll see just below Ken's name, there's a link to the report, which is hosted on the Education Scotland website, and I'll give it its full title: the Curriculum for Excellence Management Board Report of the Working Group on the First Year of the New National Qualifications. And tonight's show will last about 30 minutes. And if you'd like to pose a comment or a question to Ken during the show, then you can get in touch in two ways. You can email edutalker@hotmail.co.uk, that's edutalker. Or if you're on Twitter, you can pop something up there and just include the hashtag Edutalk, EDUTALK. So just to start off with, Ken, some listeners are from further afield in Scotland. Could you just start by giving us a kind of brief introduction to your career in education?
Yes, well, I started as a geography teacher in Ayrshire, and I then became an education advisor in Fife, and I then moved on to the inspectorate, where I was in the inspectorate for 18 years, and in the last year took up the post of chief executive at GTCS.
Thanks for that. And just to set the context, could you start by just giving us an idea of the remit of the group in relation to this report, which I believe was requested by the Cabinet Secretary, and which organisations was membership of the group drawn?
Yes, well, the report was commissioned by the Curriculum for Excellence Management Board, David, and basically the remit was to reflect on the first year's experiences of the new qualifications, and those are the experiences not just of teachers but also of learners and parents. We were asked to also reflect on the preparation for S4 within broad general education, and to come up with what were the kind of key messages and actions that it was felt would be helpful for teachers and Dovery partners as we moved into 2014-15, and finally to think what more might be done nationally and locally to support the learning and teaching of the new national qualifications in years beyond the session 14-15. So the working group was drawn from members of the Curriculum for Excellence Management Board. So there were representatives from NASUWT, the National Parent Forum of Scotland, EIS, Education Scotland, School Leader Scotland, SQA, ADES, and the Scottish Government itself.
And how did the group go about collecting the information for the report? I mean, it must have been quite a tight time schedule.
Well, the working group was commissioned in March this year, which happened to be at a Curriculum for Excellence Management Board meeting that I wasn't at. So when I was back in circulation, I was told I was chairing this group with the intention of trying to get a report into the system for the start of the new academic session that's just started there last month. So it was relatively tight. The working group met on three occasions, and at the first meeting, we agreed that each member of the group would go back to our respective constituencies and seek views on the first year experiences of implementing the new national qualifications, and also get views on what needed to be done immediately to try and improve the some of the issues that folk had come across for the next year, this year, the academic session 14-15, but also give some thought to what might need to be done over the longer term in order to make the new national qualifications as manageable as possible. So yes, it was a very tight timescale, and the report was published as soon as we could. You'll be aware, David, it went out with the GTCS's Teaching Scotland magazine just a couple of weeks ago, and that was to try and ensure that all teachers in Scotland got a hard copy as close to the start of the new academic session as it was possible.
Now, it'd be great to hear, obviously many teachers, hopefully most teachers in Scotland have read the report, but many people, as I say, listen to Edu Talk from beyond Scotland. So in a moment, I'll just look for you to outline the kind of key reflections then of the working group contained in the report. And just before you do that, Ken, I'll just, you've posed some of your own reflective questions for listeners. We often ask guests on EduTalk to do so. Cracking questions, which I think will be taken to Moan staff room and meetings in the next week or so. So your first question is, to what extent are you clear or clearer after year one in your understanding of the assessment standards expected by SQA? Secondly, you ask listeners, with the first year's experience of National 4-5 under your belt, what changes have you at your department or school made or do you plan to make to ensure that year two is more manageable in delivering and assessing National 4-5 courses? And third and final is, to what extent are you, your department or school, monitoring the experience of learners undertaking National 4-5 to ensure that the arrangements are manageable for them? So your group's sort of key reflections then in year one of the Nationals, Ken?
Yes, I mean, I think that there was quite a variation in the views and the range of experiences, as you might imagine, that came from a group as diverse as having representatives from the professional associations, from Education Scotland, from the Directors of Education, from SQA, and so on. I think there were a number of universal themes, David, that came through in the first year's reflection. I mean, I think, first and foremost, I think everyone acknowledged that teachers had to work very hard for the young people to make the last academic year work for the youngsters themselves. And I think there was general recognition that there was a significant increase in the demands above and beyond what teachers might ordinarily be expected to have. Certainly a good number of teachers that I spoke to myself made it very clear that year two could not be the same as year one, and you know, various teachers commenting about the level of demand, the level of workload that fell upon them. So, I mean, I think there was absolute consistency around those reflections. I think there were a number of other reflections that folk presented. The demands of verification and the volume of paperwork and the amount of reassessment and the burdensome over-assessment that took place in the first year, these were all reflected in the comments that folk brought to the table. There were issues particularly around the newness of the new courses at National 4-5, about the time to cover some of these courses. There were a number of teachers who made it very clear that some of them and some of the youngsters actually commented positively on having assessment throughout the year. I think a number of teachers felt that latterly they were teaching to the test, which tended to cut against the kind of aspirations of Curriculum for Excellence and the notion that assessment was going to be integral to the learning and teaching. And a knock-on effect of that was the reflection that many teachers felt there was reduced time to introduce some of the very different learning and teaching approaches that perhaps they had been delivering and students have been used to in the broad general education, and that some of the kind of notions of deep learning went out the window simply because they were finding it difficult to deal with the assessment arrangements. So I think these were some of the reflections. There was also there were other comments that were made amongst the team about one that sticks in my mind was about the difficulty in some schools of actually motivating students who are studying National Fours, and that question about the status of National Four, with it being wholly internally assessed as opposed to National Five, which had an external examination. That was reflected in the discussion, as was comment about the appropriateness of some of the materials that had been produced to support the introduction of the new qualifications, the access to those, the overall usefulness in terms of what teachers might have expected. So quite a broad range of reflections in the year.
And so you were getting this information through the various kind of constituent bodies, and of the management board. And I'm just wondering that as all this feedback was coming into the group, were there significant differences at all between the different kind of constituency, different stakeholders in Scottish education? For example, were there particular messages from parents and carers?
Yes, I mean, the National Parent Forum did a survey around parent groups, and I think one of the things that came through from that was whilst the NPFS themselves had done a lot of work to try and clarify what the expectations of National 4-5 were, there were still a good number of parents out there who felt that they were still unsure about what the new examinations were about, and you know, to some extent also how they fitted into the kind of overall package of curriculum for excellence and what that was about. So there were particular issues coming back from the parents themselves. Equally, you know, I and others spoke directly with young people themselves who were on the receiving end of the new national qualifications, and I don't think there was any doubt that there was a ramping up of the demands on them, particularly in the period just before Easter, where internal assessments were being completed, reassessments were taking place on a regular basis, and the youngsters themselves sometimes were reporting quite excessive demands being placed on them to complete assessments, in order that they were being given the best opportunity to get the course award on their certificate. So the feedback from the youngsters themselves was an interesting aspect to the exercise, as it was from parents themselves. So I think quite a range of experiences coming back to the members of the group.
And I'm just with. How much confidence do you have then, Ken, that you know that we're not going to face this situation again this year? I mean, in a couple of places in the report, it seems to be suggesting that one way that, I'm not saying it is happening yet, but that as we move into the kind of longer term, would be to move away from the unit-by-unit approach to National 4 and 5 and go more for the combined and portfolio approaches to assessment.
Yes, I mean, I think that was one of the interesting suggestions that came through on a fairly regular basis from teachers, was that they were anxious that within any single unit assessment there was that requirement to pass every standard or every outcome within the unit assessment, rather than having an overall assessment pass. And that in itself, the need to pass every standard or outcome in itself is a major contributory factor to the amount of reassessment and the resultant pressures and demands that brought on teachers and pupils. You're asking me about how confident I am. I mean, I think I would be confident that year two will be much more manageable if the actions that are set out in the report by the various constituent partners, the SQA, the local authorities, Education Scotland, and schools and teachers themselves, if they take them forward, I think would have confidence. What was interesting talking to a good number of teachers that I spoke to was that, because many of them said, you know, we cannot have another year like last year because we're really at a breaking point. Many of them were already finding ways forward and in a sense, you know, finding their own salvation in terms of what they planned to do for the second year. I mean, one of the most obvious ones in many schools that I visited was that head teachers, faculty heads, principal teachers were saying, next year, i.e. this academic session, we need to have much more of a strategic plan in the school so that assessment is planned at a school level as opposed to at an individual department or faculty level, because what was clear from year one was that with the very best of intentions, teachers tended to leave some of the unit assessments to the very end, and on occasion, you know, gave youngsters the opportunity to be reassessed several times in order that they could have the opportunity of gaining the award overall. So I think there have been a lot of lessons learned. I mean, at the same time, I would say there were some departments that I visited myself, and I know others in the working group, where they had done their very best to make the assessment as manageable as possible. And one of the worries for me has been that in some schools where, not saying there was less demand, but certainly they seemed to have a better approach to the assessment, some of their approaches and ideas were not necessarily being shared across other departments in the same school or indeed across other subjects in other schools in the same authority. So I think as the report suggests, if the actions that have been set out there, for example, better local and national sharing of approaches to assessment, sharing good practice and planning assessment and learning, I think all of those things would go quite a way to reducing some of the pressures that we saw in year one.
And you mentioned in the report the possible use of strategic assessment calendars. I've not heard that specific phrase before, but I can imagine what it is. Did you come across examples of these, or is this something that others are just advocating should be introduced?
Yeah, no, I think, I mean, basically, that was schools taking a kind of strategic responsibility for an assessment calendar so that teachers were not necessarily all assessing, or departments were assessing in the same week or at the same time, or trying to look at it very much from the perspective of the youngster and looking at the demands on the students themselves, so that whilst they might be getting social studies or social subjects assessments in one particular week, you know, a week or two later they were getting them in another area of the curriculum, and actually trying to plan that as best as possible across the school, because as I say, with the best will in the world, most teachers seem to leave the assessments as late as possible in order to try and ensure that the youngster had the best chance of passing it. And what you found then was that where there were requirements for reassessment, and particularly where some youngsters hadn't passed some of the assessments earlier on in the course, all of that was getting lumped into the period, you know, February, March, up in the run-up to Easter, which, you know, I think the reflection of everyone in the group was that that was a very difficult and pressured time for teachers, but consequentially also on the youngsters themselves.
You mentioned all the different responsibilities and actions that the group feel are required. It appears to me that the Education Scotland, you know, were either getting on with a lot of good development work, or they've taken on board pretty quickly some of the recommendations. Would you say that you're pleased with the kind of additional support that's come out over the summer and into the start of this term from Education Scotland?
Yeah, and I mean, it's not just Education Scotland. I mean, I think the fact that SQA have announced a reduction in the verification requirements will certainly go some way towards reducing the demands, the volumes of paperwork and such like. I don't have any doubt about that. And I think that the first year that SQA have undertaken the verification has given them intelligence on what they then need to do in year two. So instead of having three rounds of verification, and particularly this last year where the third round is very demanding, I think having it phased over two stages over the year will go some way towards reducing some of the pressures. And I think from the Education Scotland front, I mean, obviously that was my previous employer, and I was heavily involved in trying to produce some of the resources to support teachers. That was never an easy ask, David, in as much as some of the course materials that were produced were very, very high quality in the eyes of some teachers, but that self-same material was deemed to be inappropriate by other teachers. And we all know as professionals, you know, nobody produces course materials or resources quite as well as we ourselves do for our particular context. So it was always going to be a big ask, I think, for Education Scotland to provide resources that would necessarily support everyone and the courses and the way in which these were taught and so on. But I do think that the way in which both SQA and particularly Education Scotland have begun to structure their website, where there are a lot of resources. And if you go to the Education Scotland website and look at the key curriculum support section, the resources are now much better set out and I think much more accessible than they ever were, then I think, again, that gives me some hope that teachers will find within that materials, resources, advice and guidance that perhaps is now more easily found than perhaps was the case this time last year, because that certainly was one of the issues that came through the reflections of the group, that whilst it was recognised there was a lot of material out there, sometimes the lack of clarity as to where these resources were, finding time for teachers to actually go through the websites and look for them, that was never perhaps as well signalled as it now is. So I think there have been lessons learned. And some of the other things that Education Scotland have been working on to try and help provide route maps through learning teaching assessment, for example, publishing materials for other courses like National 3, and also in the system, I believe, by 2015 National 1-2 materials and so on. So I think that there was an early recognition by Education Scotland, the SQA, and I think all the national bodies that more needed to be done in order to provide support to teachers and obviously to young people to help make the implementation of the new nationals as manageable as possible.
I'll just say at this point that you're listening to Ken Muir, who's the Chief Executive of the GTCS, and we're talking about the recent report on the first year of the Nationals in Scotland, and we've got about 8 or 10 minutes left this evening, so if you're listening to a live show, you can still email or get in touch via Twitter if you've got comments or questions for Ken. Just as we wait for listeners to get in touch, Ken, just a couple more from myself. Again, looking at these long-term actions that are required by the various stakeholders, at school level, it appears in light of your report that there'd be a strong argument for the slight amendment of school improvement plans across the country. I don't think you actually state that, but you seem to give a steer possibly towards just having another look at the current improvement plans and possibly making some changes in light of the recommendations in your report.
Yeah, I mean, I think in the short-term actions within the report, David, I think I set out the fact that the local authorities should be supporting teachers in more effective approaches to assessment, and use the school improvement plan and the working time agreements as a kind of backdrop to that. I think really what the group was saying there is that You know, we recognise that time is needed. If this is to be a priority, time is needed. And you know, a lot of the time is allocated, if you like, or the priorities are set through the school improvement plan. So I think what we were trying to do there was to say this is important and time needs to be made available for it to happen. So that's really why within the report, I can't remember offhand whether it's in the long term one as well, but certainly in the short term actions, there is a reference somewhere to the school improvement plans and recognition of the working time agreement as a means of trying to create some space for these actions to be taken forward, and that's why it's referenced there.
And I'm thinking as we move towards the new hires, then I mean there's some kind of general pointers as we hope to ensure a successful implementation in the coming months and years of the new hires. So, is there any sort of particular advice that you would pick out from this report that you think that teachers who are busy developing the new hires and implementing them should really take on board at this point? And similarly, maybe keep it two separate questions, but for our international listeners, what would be the key points from this report that you think they should be taking on board for any curricular assessment changes in their own countries?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I think one of the messages that came through from talking to teachers was that whilst there was a degree of trepidation about moving into introducing the new hire in some cases the year following the introduction of the National 4-5, I think what I got from a good number of them, not all of them, but a good number, was that they themselves had learned a lot from implementing National 4-5, which allowed them to have a degree of confidence going into the hire, where I think there is an expectation that there might be a degree less change in the actual courses themselves than perhaps there was in National 4 and 5. So I think there is still a pressure there in teachers looking still to revise the broad general education S1 to S3, making the adjustments to National 4-5 in the back of their first year experience, and at the same time thinking about introducing the new hires. So I think National 4-5, I'm sure, I'm confident, and I know from speaking to teachers, a lot of them have learned a lot about national standards and what is required by way of the new qualifications that will stand them in good stead for the hires. In terms of the overall second part of your question, David, about you know what advice might we give to international colleagues, I mean, I actually think that when you tease out what the issues and the problems have been in respect of Nationals 4-5, and remember, a good number of schools have been very successful in delivering it. I know it's been a very demanding year overall, but you know, there has been success in delivering National 4-5, albeit at some cost. I think that the basic issue has been to do with communication, and that's been communication on a number of fronts: communication with parents about what they might expect, communication with pupils as to what the demands of the system and the new assessment arrangements are on them, communication between the national bodies about what is planned, what has been published, what the expectations are in terms of the standards and so on. I mean, I think getting the communication well sorted out at all levels, I think is probably the one area in which I would be pointing any international colleagues towards. And I think, having said that, I think we have tried hard in Scotland to keep those communication channels open as much as we can, but I think it's only with this first year of experience of the new Nationals 4 and 5 that we realise that more could always have been done to make those communications more effective.
There's just a wee question here, Ken, and this is for myself as a classroom teacher in a residential special school setting, but it refers to the senior phase, and you were talking about more, saying that there should be an encouragement of more flexible and mixed pathways through the senior phase, and moving away from a kind of year-on-year approach, and I found that fascinating, you know, what we looked after and accommodated children, and there's a, I would certainly... In my own setting, it's a reducing number year on year of young people who are leaving care at the end of fourth year. We seem to be more flexible putting packages in place to ensure that they kind of they buy into the quite still fairly formal education package, you know, into S5. And it got me thinking that particular group of learners that. As that change happens at a kind of social work level, or through children's hearings, etc., that we might be thinking now with such old children, maybe at the end of S3 and S4, about a longer term approach, a more integrated approach to their learning that goes beyond, it goes to a second or a third year within the senior phase. And that really stuck with me, and I don't know if you want to pick up on that or talk more broadly about what kind of flexible and mixed pathways you were seeing out there.
Yeah, I mean, I think that recommendation actually sits alongside the more general recommendation about trying to ensure that the aspirations of CFE are realised. You know, this notion that we're moving through that 3-18 continuum, and particularly for secondary schools and residential special can have quite an itinerant population, if you like, as you well know, David. But I mean, I think trying to see the senior phase as being a period where you can gain a number of qualifications and achievements by the end of that period, and it doesn't all need to be done in a particular year. So really what that's talking about, but more flexible ways, meaning looking at the possibility of a two-year hire from the off, more mixed pathways, aligning with some of the stuff that's come through in Serene Wood's report recently on vocational education. And that's the kind of thing, trying to plan a kind of journey for each of the individual learners so that what they're leaving with at the end of their period, whether it be a full 3 years or 2 years, or in the case very often in residential special, just simply after a year, trying to see ways in which they can achieve the most they can, but using that senior phase as an opportunity to leave with something that is tangible and beneficial to them as they move on in their learning. And for many, it might be into a college context. For some, it will certainly be into higher education. For some, it hopefully will be into employment. So it's about linking that to that original aspiration about that continuum of lifelong learning 3-18, and not seeing it as being simply, 1 year in which you get qualifications and that's it. And I think in fairness, I think the colleges have always taken that view. I think the universities now are much more in line with that kind of way of thinking, so that it's about what you leave with at the end of your senior phase, irrespective of how many years it is, rather than thinking about, what is it I'm going to get this year, and focusing solely on that.
And just finally for me, Ken, just going back to the kind of support that's available and the support that we provide to each other, but there was a couple of things that jumped out. You were mentioning about facilitating better sharing of resources, and that's not without its challenges. And you also mentioned about national forums. I was wondering whether you were talking about, us having another go at doing that online, or whether we need to take time and resources to make that more face-to-face. And also about, I'm out with local authority, but you mentioned about lead subject specialists. So could you maybe pick up on a couple of those points?
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the things that's perhaps bedevilled us in Scottish education over the years, David, has been that whether I like it or not, generally the only time you ever get major change to the curriculum and to learning and teaching approaches is when we change the exams. So, you know, the exams, as we know, are a major driver in the system. I think what we're moving towards in Scottish education is much more the curriculum and learning and teaching being the driver for what it is we then value and what it is we then assess and what we recognise through our qualifications. And it's part of that kind of cultural shift, I think, that we're making with Curriculum for Excellence. So the Education Scotland have begun to establish these 3-18 curriculum learning and teaching national forums. Now, I was involved in setting them up before I left Education Scotland over a year ago, and I know they've moved on significantly then, but the basic thinking of them is that we want to get experts in the 3-18 curriculum area sitting around the table talking about the curriculum, talking about the learning and teaching approaches that are appropriate, and then making a decision about, well, what does that then mean for the examinations and the qualifications that we give? And that's a very different way of thinking about what you focus most on. If the focus is on the curriculum and the courses and programs and the learning and teaching and the approaches to learning and teaching, then I think that's a better starting point than what we have been bedeviled with for many years. I mean, you hear teachers talking about teaching to the test or teaching to the exam and so on. And you know, more and more, I think, education systems around the world are beginning, as we have done in Scotland through Curriculum for Excellence, to look at the kind of curriculum and what are the skills, what's the knowledge and understanding, what are the linkages between areas of the curriculum, hence interdisciplinary learning and so on, that actually make learning much deeper and much more sustained than necessarily teaching to a narrow examination. So I think that's really what we were thinking on there when we were talking about those national forums, effectively being the forum in which subject-specific issues are discussed and the curriculum is refreshed and changed. And on the basis of that, changes are then made to the qualifications and the examinations. In terms of the support to Curriculum for Excellence, or the support to the curriculum, you know, we talk about having national specialists or kind of key experts at a subject level, because I think one of the things that came through, again, one of the general reflections from the group was that much lamenting of the demise of advisors who in previous curriculum times of change have been available as a kind of one-stop shop to provide support, to provide sometimes the conduit for sharing resources, sometimes just a kind of shoulder to cry on, and sometimes just a subject expert alongside a colleague who just needs a bit of reassurance. I think really what we're suggesting within the kind of the report was we need to try and find a way in which, and some authorities do this anyway, where they have a kind of lead expert in a subject area, but it's not across the board. But how do we use things like subject network groups? How do we use the expertise of folk who are setting or verifying or marking for SQA to operate at a more local level, you know, within a cluster or in the smaller local authorities within a local authority, so that there's better sharing? One of the disappointments for me, David, has been the extent to which, and I saw this in Education Scotland, where we tried to get all 95 new courses produced, resources for them, was the kind of, it wasn't a lack of willing, but there was a degree of hesitancy amongst teachers and in some cases in local authorities to encourage teachers to share their resources and to share their kind of expertise and knowledge. Now, I think that's got better as the year has gone on, but that kind of local experience and that kind of local support is really what I was trying to capture within that, in order that it's not going to replace advisors, it's not going to bring them back or anything, but almost to have in a sense, a kind of series of self-help groups that teachers can have confidence and discuss within. And these, you know, lead subject specialists, I think, as I refer to them in the report, they're then there as a kind of focal point for sharing and discussing, and, as I say, sometimes just giving a bit of support where it's needed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, sounds great. I'm conscious of the time, Ken, so just to finish up, I don't know if you, do you want to share any more of what's on the horizon in terms of the work of the Curriculum for Excellence Management Board. I'm also thinking about the improvement plan and the other kind of plans and documents that have been produced by the board. Are these publicly available?
Well, the Curriculum for Excellence Management Board plan is available. I mean, it's available on the Education Scotland website. So part of what the report talks about is the need for that plan to be updated in the light of what the report itself has said. So that plan basically sets out what are the main kind of priorities for the year. So yes, the Curriculum for Excellence Management Board itself, its plan needs to be adjusted to take account of what's in the report. But if you go into the Education Scotland website and go into the Curriculum for Excellence section, I can't tell you exactly where it is, but I can assure you it is there. That implementation plan sits there.
And will the board continue to meet, you know, regularly as we move into year two and light of the new hires? And, you know, well, do you think there'll be a need for a further report a year down the line, or are we in safe hands now?
Well, certainly the Curriculum for Excellence Management Board continues to meet, David, and, you know, is monitoring the implementation, hence the reason for the working group being established. I genuinely hope that a similar group will not need to set up over the next year or two with the introduction of the new hires and the new advanced hires, in the sense that if that is required, then I think it probably shows that we maybe haven't learnt the lessons of the first year of implementing Nationals 4 and 5. I mean, I've been staggered by the kind of creativity of teachers in trying to manage what has been a very difficult year. And I think, as I said earlier, I think a lot of them, through bitter experience in this last year, have found ways in which they can make the assessment, reassessment regime much more manageable. I think they've better understood the standards that are expected of them. I think they've found ways in which to overcome issues that have at times seemed quite insurmountable. I think they've got a better idea of the range of resources that are available. And I think all of those lessons, not just by teachers themselves, but I think by national bodies like Education Scotland, SQA and the other support agencies, I think these have been well learned from the first year. And I would certainly hope that such a report is not necessary for the next few years on higher and advanced higher as we introduce them.
Ken, thank you so much for giving up your valuable time this evening to join us on EduTalk.
My pleasure, David. Thank you.
And best wishes for the future.